Microsoft and Google announced earnings, which are not so good, but the companies themselves are doing okay. And we talked to Nicole Lee about coffee and robots. Plus, Comcast is okay with the Unlock the Box campaign, but is the FCC okay with their app? We're not sure. All that and a whole lot more on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1497, recorded Thursday, April 21st, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Epson's new EcoTank printers. With Epson's line of SuperTank all-in-one printers, you can print thousands of documents without running out of ink. EcoTank is loaded and ready to print when you are. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank to find out more.
And by PillPack, a full-service online pharmacy that combines modern technology, convenient packaging, and personalized service to make your life easier. Visit PillPack.com/twit to save $20 on vitamins and OTCs when you transfer your prescriptions.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we talk about technology you need, technology you don't, the news, the biggest stuff. We try to make the boring stuff exciting.
with musical instruments.
Yeah, maybe.
And juggling.
And journalists, yeah, who we love and respect.
Probably more importantly.
Mm-hmm. I am Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. We've been in Vegas the last couple of days, but this Vegas trip is a little bit different because I didn't return with like a nice tan.
Mm-mm.
Or actually, yeah, really, like a sunburn is right. What it usually ends up being.
Yeah. Your wife told you to bring your bathing suit and your flip-flops.
She did, actually. She was like, you never know. It's like, no, but I'm going there for work. It's not like I'm going to be like swimming, you know, at the poolside in the afternoon.
Well, all she knew is she was taking care of your children, so you were the one that was relaxing.
It's true. It's true. I'm not going to lie. Going to Vegas, even when for work, some things are just a little bit easier. Let's just say that.
Yep.
Joining us today, I am happy to welcome to the show, because Nicole is awesome, and it's been a while, Nicole Lee from Engadget. How's it going, Nicole?
Hello. It's good to be back after a while, it seems.
I know. So I've worked with you at CNET, of course, and I also, you worked here at Twit for quite a while. Megan, I just found out, didn't work with you necessarily at Tech TV, but almost.
Almost, yeah. I don't think we really crossed paths, but I do follow you on Twitter, so it feels like I know you. I hope that doesn't sound creepy.
It's all right.
Okay.
I know. Aren't we all kind of used to that at this point? No, so much. So what are you working on at Engadget these days? I know there for a long time you were really kind of deep into kind of product reviews and stuff, but you've kind of shifted focus at Engadget.
You know, it's sort of shifted over the years. Like right now, I'm covering a lot of social media, internet stuff, cultural sort of the way where culture sort of intersects with technology, and that's sort of where I'm trying to focus my reporting on. But you know, I tend to cover whatever comes up in the news, and today happens to be, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, it happens to be Microsoft, and yeah, kind of depends on the topic of the day and what's requested. But yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. I think we should talk about Microsoft. Let's get started.
That's a great starting point. Let's go.
There's a Microsoft update, not an update. Let's start off with the earnings. They came out of Redmond today, and they fell short of analysts' expectations, and shares dropped as a result. The main culprit, the weak PC market and a higher tax rate for this period. Nicole, you also posted a piece specifically on Microsoft's mobile market. What's the story there?
So the big deal here, and this is kind of a continuing trend, you know, Microsoft has just not been able to turn around its mobile business. You know, a few years ago, they bought Nokia for a lot of money, and that just, it's not working out really well for them. Last quarter, they reported a dip of mobile revenue by as much as 46%, and it sold only 2.3 million Lumias over the past 3 months, which is a 73% drop.
I really appreciate using Lumia as if it's currency, because it actually does kind of sound like it's currency. Yeah. 2.3 Lumias, that's a lot. Wow, it's almost like stones. But anyways, continue.
Yeah, like this is definitely a downward trend. Now, last quarter they reported a 54% drop, and this quarter they reported a 46% drop. So it's just continually just like, you know, it's just going down and down and down, and they're just not able to turn around the Windows Phone business.
So was there good news? I know that there was bad news with the phone, but was there good Microsoft news today?
That was probably the only big sort of downward trend was phone. Everything else was sort of on the up and up. You know, they're making really good money in their cloud business, their IoT businesses. Surface, their Surface tablet PC segment is doing really pretty good. 61% up year over year, the Surface Pro 4 and the Surface Book, the newly released one with the laptop and all of that. And that was sort of really popular with them, which is really interesting to me that the product, the Surface product that they made from the ground up is really growing, whereas the company they bought for a lot of money, Nokia, is not doing so well. Yeah. So it's sort of interesting thing to think about that. But their PC market kind of dwindling, but then PC market in general is kind of dwindling, I would say, like in just overall, just the whole industry, the PC industry in general is kind of going down. But they've invested well in the cloud. Office 365 is really good. Their office businesses has really been jumping a lot. So they're trying to hedge their bets, I think, in moving towards the cloud and IoT.
Yeah, I mean, the PC market slowdown, like you said, like we just heard about Intel, you know, they had to lay off 11% of their workforce, their earnings were down as a result. This whole kind of Microsoft mobile aspect, the mobile just not hitting. It's really unfortunate because when you've got a decline on the PC side, why is that even happening? It's happening because of mobile. Yet Microsoft just struggles and cannot kind of replace one with the other. Everybody else is kind of eating their lunch in that regard. Nadella said in the earnings call, it's halfway to its goal, to Microsoft's goal of $20 billion in cloud revenue by 2018. Like you said, going strongly there. They also want 1 billion Windows 10 devices by 2018. Right now it's sitting at 270 million, and it's not really looking, you know, at least at this particular point, that seems like a lofty goal. But I suppose anything can change.
Yeah, and there was also a big piece of news. We'll go back to Microsoft, the Windows Phone. It appears that one of the last people, definitely one of the last big evangelizers for Windows Phone, has given hers up. Mary Jo Foley of ZDNet and Windows Weekly has turned in her Lumia icon and replaced it with a Nexus 6P, running Android, of course. Mm-hmm. What do you guys think about this?
I mean, I have to imagine if someone like Mary Jo is switching away from Windows Phone, then there's a big problem there. You know what I mean? She even said in her write up, like, I honestly thought I'd be the last to go down with it, and at a certain point, I had to make the change.
It makes me wonder if Microsoft will do a BlackBerry and make an Android phone of their own, like a Microsoft branded Android phone. It's not completely outside of the realm of possibility, you know. Like Android's kind of where a lot of people want their phone operating systems to be, because it's familiar. People use Google, yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if that happens, but. I
mean,
I don't know.
Microsoft has proven that it's open to it's not Android averse, you know. Mm-hmm. Like they've released all their apps and services. They continually are releasing these new experimental Microsoft Garage apps on Android and not on Windows Mobile. So, you know, they've shown time and time again that they're open to the Android platform. Yeah, it could be kind of a situation where they're dipping their toes in the water. Windows Phone right now sits at a 1% market share. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty insignificant, as far as that's concerned.
If BlackBerry's beating you, like, that's kind of a good sign.
Yeah, I am a huge fan of Mary Jo's, and it's just her article is so funny. I mean, you know, because she says, I'm part of the 1%. I was part of the 1%. She's not anymore. She said, you know, she's never been an app person. But then she realized that she's never been an app person because she's just gotten used to assuming that she sees a cool app and it's not going to come to Windows Phone.
Yeah.
You know, and so now that she has an Android phone and she just thinks, oh, okay, well, I have these apps I like and I'm ready to have new ones. I don't have to have that worry of, oh, that's that wonderful thing, and just get her hopes crashed once again. I also love how unapologetic she is about just disliking all Apple products. She's just like,
it was a whole paragraph. It was by the way, ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, I don't like them. I don't like the company. I owned an iPad for 5 minutes, and I don't have any Apple products, and I won't ever again. And she's just so matter of fact. I love that.
Yeah. She knows what she wants, and she knows what she doesn't want. There we go. All right. In this earnings palooza, we now have Alphabet revealing its numbers from the past quarter. And though it did okay, it still resulted in a drop in after-hours trading by around 3 to 5%. Not sure where exactly that settled right before showtime at this point anyways. $16.47 billion in net revenue. Expectations set slightly higher than that at 16.56. So they missed their expectations, not by very much, though. Its other bets category, things like Fiber and Nest, did around $166 million. 1 year ago, it sat at less than half. At $80 million. So that's improving, but still, other bets saw an operating loss of $802 million. So not all a moneymaker at this point. By no means this is like changing, you know, changing the direction of the company at all. It's still totally an experimental thing if these number, you know, if you kind of follow along with these numbers. I don't know. Still, I think it's a great year for Alphabet. This year, 39% up on its shares. So I mean, things are doing okay. Slight miss, but things overall seem all right.
Yeah, if you consider a loss of tens of millions of dollars.
The
company as a whole is doing fine, but it's so funny because it's like, it's a 5% drop. Like, they're worth over $500 billion. So it's like, oh, it's a 5% drop. That's tens of millions of dollars.
That's a fantastic point when you're talking about these numbers, even a slight, tiny little percentage. I mean, and that's actually, you know, there was a while not too long ago when Google was considered the most valuable company. Mm-hmm. And that was just for a split moment. And then Apple kind of pushed it back out. And now Apple's sitting around $60 billion more, you know, than Alphabet. These numbers, when you're talking about just the gigantic, crazy numbers that these companies are kind of competing against each other with, a small percentage point actually does mean a big shift. Yeah. What do you think, Nicole?
I think it's really interesting, you know, like part of the announcement going on. I mean, part of the deal with the Alphabet, and I'm still getting used to calling them Alphabet instead of Google.
Me too.
But I think the really interesting takeaway from this earnings report is really that their ad revenue, which is their bread and butter, right, is their ad revenue. They're using that money to fund sort of slightly more esoteric projects like their AI stuff, Google X, you know, Nest, Calico, all of those other different side, quote unquote, side projects that are sort of spun off into their own entities now. And I think it'll be really interesting come Google I.O. in a month or two, mm-hmm. To see where that direction is heading. Like, I'll be really interesting to see developments in their self-driving car initiatives, in their AI initiatives. I think that's going to be a very interesting thing going forward because AI is the hot thing
really
in
is.
Tech right now.
Really
so,
is.
So I think Google is poised to like really announce something big in that arena.
Yeah. I mean, Pichai even said during the earnings call, their investments in AI starting to pay off, starting to kind of differentiate and remove Google from the pack. And he ended the earnings call by alluding to moving away from a mobile-first world, which is where he says we are now, and I'm sure I would agree with that, to an AI-first world. So, you know, that gives you a little bit of a hint of kind of Google shifting focus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're absolutely poised. I mean, AI is about technology and data, and they have a lot of both.
To say the least. Quick follow-up on yesterday's news while we're still talking about Google, that the EU was charging Google with antitrust with Google's Android OS. Google actually did issue its own statement on its Europe blog yesterday, stating its stances on the charges. Basically, that partner agreements are voluntary, that manufacturers commit to testing and certifying app compatibility, as well as the ability to load not only Google's apps, but any other pre-installed apps that they want, including competitor apps. So they're saying, okay, yes, we've got our apps, we've got our services, we bake that in, but really you can install anything you want on top of that. We just, you know, require that those be there if you want to be part of this agreement. Also, Google reiterated that keeping Android free revolves around making money in other ways, hence those apps and services that are included on the devices. Nicole, in your opinion, is there enough of a difference here from what we saw with Microsoft in its kind of legendary antitrust ruling a few years back versus what we're seeing now with Google?
I think so. I think the fact that Google has a relatively open operating system probably saves them a little bit more than Microsoft's sort of more closed structure. Just going off on this news anyway. And I think it's interesting. I think, you know, giving away Windows 10 was a good move. And I think the fact that Android itself is free and all of that, I think is a good move too. I do understand the EU is way more tough on this kind of like pre-installed app thing than, you know, the US is. And I kind of see the point of view, but I think in the long run, I think it's a good thing.
I think so too. Yeah, I mean, all this ties in. You know, we're talking about Google and Microsoft numbers, and everybody just sort of the rising tide. You know, raises all boats. Mm-hmm. That you know, Microsoft is saying we have more search, we have more Bing results, and that's partly because you know you search Bing when you have Windows 10, and they're giving away Windows 10. But at the same time, because more people are using Bing, doesn't mean fewer people are using Google necessarily. Like a lot of people are doing a lot of searching, so.
Sure.
Here's another follow-up, this time to our story last week about the FCC's Unlock the Box campaign, demanding that Comcast and other cable companies stop forcing customers to rent cable boxes. It appears that Comcast is more than willing to get rid of the cable box, so they say. The Wall Street Journal says Comcast subscribers can now watch directly from their Roku and their Samsung Smart TVs. So they're saying basically, okay, we're fine with this. And, you know, the real complaint. Others were saying that the complaint is that if we have to do this, if we have to get rid of the cable box, then Google and others will, you know, find out how more about our ad network and how we make money that way. And they were worried about that. But Comcast apparently is not.
Comcast is definitely doing a little bit of a locked down proprietary approach in this. The FCC has actually said, has come out on the record with this move to say that it's not good enough.
Yeah.
And to basically say it only offers Comcast proprietary UI, only Comcast content. It also, it doesn't allow device integration or search across all Comcast content along, you know, like tied into search with non-Comcast content. So, and FCC kind of likened Comcast, you know, at a baseline as just another content provider, which I'm sure really upset Comcast as a company. So I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a good start, but if the FCC isn't satisfied, then I suppose neither am I, because Comcast, that's why. What do you think, Nicole?
No, I have to say, like, I mean, I think this is a great first step. Like, get rid of the box. Just give it a computer. I don't even know why we need it aside from just like the renting it. I guess the rental fees are sort of the big thing that they get out of it.
For sure.
But for me, I think I kind of understand the skepticism, because Comcast was one of the last people to even work with Roku. They were one of the last cable providers to like, oh yeah, we'll let HBO, HBO go on the Roku. They were one of the last people. Like Time Warner was on board. Like every other cable provider was on board except for Xfinity, Comcast, and I was just like, why aren't you agreeing? Why aren't you working with Roku? And yeah, so I understand their sort of feelings about this, but
Yeah, don't stand between Nicole. Yeah, don't stand between Nicole and her Game of Thrones. That's what you're saying, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I still need to watch Game of Thrones. I've never seen an episode of Game of Thrones. I'm failing everyone. I'm failing myself. First episode's free on Google Play. Just thought I'd throw that out there. There you go. I'll get caught up and see if it catches me. And then maybe I'll sign up for Comcast to watch the rest of it. That's all.
No, you don't need to. There's other ways to get
HBO. Thankfully, there are. We live in the world of the internet where everything's magical. 2016 or 2016, as I'm always trying to say, is the year of privacy on the internet, or so it seems. Along those lines, the latest developer version of the Opera browser for Windows and Mac includes VPN support baked into the browser. It's completely free. Now, normally a VPN costs money, and usually it kind of requires like a separate app or a plugin to be installed and running in the background. And when you do that, it actually reroutes your web traffic, hides your IP address, allows for a more anonymous surfing experience, along with, you know, things like gaining access to things like blocked content and that might happen based on your region, many other reasons that you might want to use something like this. And now it's just kind of being baked into the Opera browser. I'm not sure how popular the Opera browser is, so I, you know, they stand to benefit if this kind of differentiates them. But I feel like it was all about encryption, and now it's all about, hey, well, what's the next step? Let's bake in a VPN. That's a good thing, right? What do you guys think?
So the instant I heard about this, it's like, oh, you know, I can finally stream like movies and shows that I can't normally stream before in other countries.
Yep.
That's the first thought that came to my mind. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see if that works. I don't know if it would. Like, you know, if I'm in a country that blocks Netflix, can I still watch? If I tunnel through a VPN, can I use it? I mean,
no.
I don't know. No?
It's interesting that you say that, Nicole. So a little background on the VPN that is powering this. VPN is provided by Surf Easy. They claim they don't do things. So obviously, you know, VPN is only as powerful as like how anonymous it actually is, right? They claim they don't store any IP address or software configurations of your computer, websites visited, all that kind of stuff. They do say that they comply with things like subpoenas, warrants, all that kind of stuff when asked to do so. But if they don't actually have that information, there's only so much that they could supply. If they can be trusted, I'm sure they probably can because they're associated with Opera, but you never know. That decision's up to you guys. I saw some threads of people kind of testing it out, and yes, somebody tried it with Netflix, and apparently Netflix already blocks Surf Easy. So that's the perfect use for something like VPN, Nicole. I'm not knocking it at all. I just don't know if that's going to work for Netflix specifically.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, all right. Back to the drawing board.
Yeah, I think Surf Easy is owned by Opera. Yeah. They're like an Opera property. Yeah. So, yeah, I downloaded it. It was great. I mean, it was pretty easy to turn it on. It's the developer version, by the way, but anyone can, you don't have to be a developer. Anybody can download it. And, you know, it's a little bit slower, but that's just the problem with VPN. If you have a real reason to use it, I think this is great because it's free and it's built in.
Yeah.
And, you know, people have their reasons.
Just remember, nothing is free. So Opera actually has...
What was that?
Well, no. You know what they say. If it's free, then you are the currency, right? Your data is the currency. So just keep that in mind, right? Like if you're using browser or Opera has an ad network. They have designs in the whole ad network space. So, you know, if that kind of thing bothers you, then maybe this isn't the right solution for you. Just know that. That's all I'm saying.
But they have a native ad blocker in the browser also.
Okay.
But you're right. Nothing's free.
Just saying. Usually VPN costs some money. And if it's not, there's something going on there.
Yeah, I guess so. You just suddenly got really ominous.
It's your data. So people care
it's
about
true.
Your, that
yes,
kind
I,
of stuff.
Yes.
I'm just warning people.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Okay. Thanks for the warning. So let's move on. As you no doubt already know, the legendary musician Prince Rogers Nelson, known to the world, of course, as Prince, has died at the age of 57. He had a very profound impact on so many of our lives. There was an unsurprising outpouring of grief on social media. I have to be honest and say it became a little suffocating after a while until I started reading the tweet storm from Anil Dash, who is the famed creator of Movable Type and founder of ThinkUp with Gina Trapani. It definitely comforted me as opposed to just the flow of, you know, pictures of colorful rain coming at me from Twitter. Dash gave some great context to Prince, and he also doesn't shy away from the harder parts of Prince's story, especially complicated relationship Prince had with music streaming and music copyright. But I guess I just wanted to know what you guys think. It's really interesting that so many people, the first thing they did to express their grief was to start sharing his music, which is exactly what he never wanted people
to do.
Yeah,
no kidding.
That was actually kind of a problem here in the office, because when we heard the news here in the office, we were devastated, obviously. And the first thing we did when Bowie passed away was we brought up his songs on Spotify and, you know, Google Play, started playing them. But Prince, there you can't do that. And you said, oh, how do I find his songs? I guess I don't know. It was one of those odd situations. And but, you know, it's. Regardless of his choices and his decisions of music streaming or not, I think we can all agree, like, he made a profound impact in the music industry and in culture in general, really. Like, there are so many musicians, people around today that probably wouldn't be around or maybe alive even if it wasn't for Prince and his work.
Mm-hmm. Right. And there's a lot. I mean, there's an insane amount of very modern music right now that is so, I mean, you hear it and it's undeniable that there is influence from Prince. He once said, if you don't own the master owns you. And that's kind of like the driving force behind why he really kind of pushed against internet distribution in general. He felt like it was his music, his creativity, and he should have complete control over it. And he went to great lengths to exercise that control. There was the Dancing Baby copyright mm-hmm. case, which I never really understood that. I respect Prince to you know, for his stance on music ownership completely, because I understand, like, any artist, I feel, should kind of be the arbiter of what happens to their art. And that doesn't always work out that way. In fact, most of the time it doesn't. Prince was able to pull that off. The Dancing Baby thing, though, I thought was pretty darn ridiculous. So, like, come on. It's just a kid dancing in a kitchen. You can hardly hear the song. No one's going to not listen to the Purple Rain, the song, like, on the album.
I think it was 1999.
Or 1999, whatever it was. Let's Go Crazy. Actually, it was Let's Go Crazy.
Yeah. See, that's the problem. It was Let's Go Crazy.
No one's going to not listen to that because there's this video where you can hear it in the background and the kids dancing to it. Like, it was a cute video. Come on, Prince. But anyways, that's about one of the only things I'll really knock him for. Even though it's hard to find his music, I respect the man's decision to say, I don't want it out there. He pulled it off, right?
It's his song, you know. I mean, it's his right. It's his right to do it, and I like it or not, you have to respect it. And you know, it's his choice. So
I do wonder what now. I wonder if mm-hmm. his kind of legacy on his music, the distribution of his music on the internet, if it gets treated differently. I think. I don't know. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I'll be really surprised to see if in the next few years, you know, there is some sort of a change. Maybe the estate makes a different change. But I would imagine they'd probably want to stick pretty close to his desires.
It depends on the money, though. It depends on where the money is, unfortunately.
I mean, hey, what were we talking about yesterday? Bob Marley, you know, Bob Marley estate made some decisions, and that was based, I have to imagine, on money, right?
Yeah.
And for better or for worse, they made that decision. So you just never know.
I know. Well, I didn't really want to talk about Bob Marley and Snapchat again, but I have to say that Snapchat again today, well, they had like a filter. Their filter today was, to their credit, they learned something. They did not put Prince's face on your face. Mm-hmm. It was, but they did have this ridiculous Purple Rain geo filter, which was just colored cartoon of rain that you could put over your face.
They were really not trying very hard. Yeah. I appreciate that what they were going for. They could have, like, made it actually rain. It's literally like they took a GIF of, like, purple dots and just put it on top of you.
I showed it to Jason, and he's like, they are not even trying. Snapchat is not even trying.
They could have done so much better. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But, yeah, from a tech angle, interesting. Also, just a profound influence on music and our lives. And so many of us listen to his music at really when we were young and impressionable. And so, yeah, he definitely had an effect on me. So thank you. After the break, tiny delivery robots that might be named Mike. But first, let's take a minute to thank Epson, the sponsor of this episode. Tech News Today is brought to you by Epson. Epson's revolutionary EcoTank line of printers for home and office introduce a new age in printing. The new EcoTank ET4550 wireless all-in-one printer doesn't use ink cartridges. Instead, it features an innovative, refillable ink tank. It comes with enough ink to print up to 11,000 black pages or 8,500 color pages. That's equivalent to about 50 ink cartridge sets. You're loaded and ready to print for up to 2 years. It's powered by Epson's leading-edge precision core technology. It delivers high-speed, vivid colors, and laser-quality black text, plus auto two-sided printing, a 30-page auto document feeder, and easy wireless printing from tablets and smartphones. It's no wonder the ET4550 printer was named a CES 2016 Innovative Awards honoree. All EcoTank printers deliver an unbeatable combination of convenience and value with ultra-low-cost replacement ink bottles. Now you have the freedom to print without running out of ink. Visit Epson.com/EcoTank today to transform the way your home, office, or workgroup prints. For the best combination of ease and value, turn to the new Epson EcoTank printers. That's EPSON.com/EcoTank, and we thank Epson for their support.
All right. We hear a lot about autonomous vehicles on this show and just out there in general. It's kind of a big deal if you hadn't heard. And the grand day somewhere down the line in the future where the roads will be blanketed with them. But how will we feel
when the sidewalks are blanketed with autonomous robots. Mike Murphy from Quartz is here once again to talk with us about delivery bots. How's it going, Mike?
Hey, not too bad. How are you doing?
Excellent. It's great to have you here. When will I begin to trip over autonomous delivery robots on the sidewalk?
Well, actually, probably very soon.
Great.
Hopefully you'll see them coming.
Yes, they're very far down below. I'm a pretty tall guy, so I hope they're at least half as tall.
But yeah, Starship Technologies, this Estonian company started by some of the Skype founders, literally the only other Estonian company I can think of, are basically rolling out this, and they announced this like a month ago, but they're rolling out tests, no pun intended, across major cities in the U.S. And I managed to catch up with Laurie right there, that guy, last week at a very small robotics conference in New York. And it was kind of awesome watching this little thing putter around.
It's kind of like a little trash can on wheels. But maybe a little bit nicer than that.
So it's not like a drone, like you're walking along with it, right? Like it's like, oh, I'm going to walk to the grocery store, but I, instead of taking a car because I'm going to have some bags that would fit in that tiny robot, I'm going to have a robot follow me home. Is that's what we're talking about here?
No, this is literally to take on whatever Amazon or Walmart or whoever is working on. This is a totally autonomous delivery system that you tell it to go to a place and it goes there on its own and comes back with the goods. So they're kind of envisioning, and they've got a few areas that they're already testing this like properly. One of them is in a part of London called Greenwich that's not too populated. Basically, you have these like – they look like shipping containers that they live in, and then they get an order to go somewhere. They go out. They get whatever they need to get. Then they go to wherever it needs to go, and then they go back to their little house and charge. They're completely autonomous, so they can be controlled by a human if something is gone wrong or something like that.
So what's keeping someone from stealing my stuff or kicking my robot?
So there's nothing stopping you from kicking it.
Okay.
Totally aware of that. It's sealed on the inside, and it's only openable either by a code, so the robot will like roll up and you'll have the app. And you have to enter a code that you'll have gotten like through an email or something like that. And they're also thinking about like QR codes and other stuff like that and like Bluetooth. But it's probably just going to be a code. And then it'll pop open literally like a cooler. It literally is like a cooler on wheels. And it's pretty much tamper proof. I tried to break it open in the middle of this conference. Could not do it. But if someone starts to like try and steal it, it's kind of going to be like trying to steal an ATM. They're kind of heavy, but more of the issue is this thing has 9 cameras on it. It will see you, and it's got a hard line to whatever local authorities, the country it's in. So, you know, if you pick it up, it's going to start freaking out, and it has an alarm on it, which apparently, according to Lori, the guy in the video, is very loud, like a car alarm. So he didn't show me that feature because we were in like a crowded place. But yeah, apparently it'll the alarm will go off. It'll alert the police. It'll alert Starship. So I wouldn't recommend picking one of these things up, but people probably will still do it.
Yeah, they're not going to know that they shouldn't unless there's like a – you know what I mean? Like will they know that there's all of these cameras? I know what I'm envisioning. I'm envisioning that one of these little bots is going to meet the same demise as the Hitch bot. If you remember from I think 2015, 2014, maybe the strategy is to keep these out of Philadelphia.
Yeah. Sad.
Yeah, I literally said that in the story.
That's so
and
sad.
I live in Philadelphia for 5 years, and I know how rough it can be.
Man. It's hard out there for a robot.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it'll happen, but I think it's also that's just going to be part of like our life in the future. We're going to have that same kind of – every reversion we've had towards any kind of new technology will continue. But Starship says that they've you know had these on the streets in multiple countries. Like they were riding it down the street in New York City, and said nobody really looked at it, or if they did, it was mainly with curiosity. Hmm. I think part of the issue is because they're very innocuous. They don't look like they're trying to be some kind of like weird C-3PO sort of thing. It's just like, oh, it's like a little, you know, it looks like a Fisher-Price toy or something. Like it doesn't look dangerous. It doesn't look like it's going to hurt you or anything like that, which I think probably could really work to its benefit. You know, unlike drones and drone deliveries, these things are going to be like, you know, massive flying lawnmowers that like drop packages from the sky. Whereas this is like a nice little robot that kind of rolls along. It says beep.
Yeah. Not to mention like drones. There's a whole, you know, new layer and it's evolving right now of kind of like logistics and clearances and regulations and all this kind of stuff. This is just, you know, puttering around on the sidewalk. Nicole, do you think these little delivery bots are a threat to like Amazon's drone fleet somewhere in the future?
I don't know if they're a threat to Amazon's
drone. I don't know. Now I'm thinking about it, I'd love to see them battle. But anyways,
yeah,
continue.
That'd be amazing. Like a battle bot, battle bot delivery bot.
Yes.
No, I think it's really interesting. I think the only thing I can think of, it's sort of the same situation, same questions I have with the drone, is like whether they're weatherproof, you know, like hazard proof, all those kinds of questions I have, like how much better are they at delivering stuff than a person might be. But if they're able to do so with the same like efficiency as a person would, like, I'm all for it, man.
Well, that's a good question, Mike. I mean, I could see Nicole getting her lunch delivered to the San Francisco Engadget office all year, whereas you in Brooklyn or New York at Quartz, it would be harder, right? Like, is it, I mean, can it go through the snow and the wind and the rain?
Yeah, they're pretty weather resistant. I mean, they're in Estonia. It's that's pretty true. harsh temperatures over there. But yeah, I mean, their whole shtick is like, this could actually return us to the days of like Domino's 30 minutes or less deliveries. Their whole goal is to have.
Finally.
Yeah, I mean, they want to do.
Pizza bot.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. Domino's is making a competitor. But, of course they are. No, I mean, their whole thing is like they want to make sure that they're delivering in under 15 minutes. So this is going to be like, you know, kind of last mile delivery, though they say that the range is up to like 10 kilometers and they can go for about 2 or 3 hours on one charge. So, and it can go, it can move about as fast as a human can walk. Difference being is, you know, it doesn't have to wait or doesn't have to deal with like traffic or anything like that. There's barely like that much traffic when you're walking. So, I mean, they want it to be so the deliveries are all less than $2 a pop and that whatever you've ordered. So you could literally be sitting at your computer desk going, I want lunch or I want a new pair of sneakers from Amazon. And in 15 minutes or maybe a little longer because it needs to get fulfilled, like you'll have that thing.
What about logistics? If from its delivery point, like it's a starting point to its destination, all there is sidewalk, that's one thing. But talk about like New York City or whatever, it's sidewalk, cross, you know, you got to wait for the light to turn, cross the street, make sure that you don't get hit by a cab, you know, that decides to run the red light or whatever. Like there's a lot of logistics that autonomous vehicles, you know, they're still working out how they maneuver through those things. Is this capable of analyzing those kinds of scenarios?
It is to a degree. So it has no problem with like curbs and like flow of traffic and things like that. But what Lori and others at Starship have told me is that it's basically they're trying to work with like cities, smart city initiatives. So like almost every city in America has some kind of thing where they want to be like more data driven and things like that. So, you know, instead of having to be like Google and with the self-driving cars and literally look, is that a red light? Can I go? Is that a stop sign? Do I have to stop? You know, kind of actually tying into the network itself. And I believe that's the sort of thing that they've been working with the council people in D.C. on.
Got it.
So I noticed in the video you made that the company is asking the internet to name these robots. And I clearly...
Good idea.
They learn nothing from Bodie McBoatface. You suggested Mike. Good suggestion. I mean, I am going to go there right now and suggest Robot McRobotface because why not?
Because Patrick DeLahanty had a really darn good idea. I like that idea. I like it.
I didn't actually suggest Mike. I have to say that was Jacob did that, our videographer. I don't know. I think I like that as like, you know, it needs like some kind of humanity. Even if that's like Robot McRobot face, I think that'd be great. It doesn't have really much of a face though, so I don't know. Maybe something else.
Robot McRobot without a face.
That's perfect. It. You just figured it out.
Okay.
Always awesome getting you on the show, Mike, because we know we're gonna see some really interesting, crazy things that I don't know if we'll ever see firsthand. But it's neat to talk about them. Mike Murphy from Quartz. Tell people where they can follow your work online.
Best place is QZ.com or on Twitter at MCWM.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
So we got an email from Matt Schultz. He wrote into TNT at twit.tv to say, on Wednesday's show, you talked about the antitrust case against Google, then how Apple's Siri is a closed ecosystem, and then finally about Amazon's Alexa. It was a good underhanded way of pointing out the ridiculous aspects of the antitrust case. Android is not the only game in town, and for all we know, it may be at the end of its prime. What we do know is that while it was wildly popular, it has real competition. It would be nice to have a third viable mobile operating system. Maybe the EU should use its money to encourage that type of competition or to create another popular fork of Android on top of those that already exist. For now, the only people who will win will be the bureaucrats and the lawyers.
Isn't that always the way it is?
Sadly, it often is.
Who would the third be? Would it be Microsoft?
Well, viable is what he said.
Ouch. Well, I mean, taking what Matt's saying here, though, if Microsoft were to do an Android device, I'm pretty sure that they would want to do a fork because they'd want it to be an Android device that works with all of their apps baked in place of Google. So maybe it is Microsoft.
Yeah, no. I think what you were saying earlier, Nicole.
And in fact, it's in Microsoft's interest to do their own fork because their whole deal at the last developer conference is Cortana. Cortana. And in order to have Cortana be their main driving force of their system, it has to be built into the phone.
Mm-hmm. Very good point. Yeah, I mean, because Cortana exists on Android, it's just not nearly as awesome because it's not as embedded. It is on Windows' own platform, or Microsoft's platform. Anyways, excellent. Thank you for emailing TNT at twit.tv. We always love getting your emails. So if you are watching or listening and have something to tell us, do it. Send us an email. Coming up, a nice cold brewed cup of coffee in under 10 minutes. That's a coffee achievement. But first, let's take a minute to thank the sponsor of this episode, and that's PillPack. We've all gotten used to dealing with just the drudgery of a traditional pharmacy. You wait around the pharmacy counter. You're waiting for someone to tell you your prescription is ready. Instead, they tell you that it isn't ready. And then you have the hassle with sorting your medication on top of it, constantly be in contact with your doctor or your health insurance company to manage it all. It can be a real pain. Well, there's a new technology company that's disrupting the pharmacy space. It's called PillPack. And PillPack is an online pharmacy. They're going to make you wonder why you ever settled for a traditional pharmacy. This is actually a PillPack box right here. So if you are a subscriber, you would get this. And as you can see, little packets with just what you need for every day. You just tear it right off, open up the packet, and there's your medication right in there. They deliver your prescriptions right to your door, so you never have to wait in line. It's even better than a normal pharmacy. They use advanced technology to sort your medications and your vitamins by the dose, so you can avoid the confusion of sorting your own pills. Pill packs go through an image recognition system. It's built to ensure that the right pill is in the right pack, so there's no mess-ups there. Their system can even detect dispensing accuracy by size and by shape, and they handle any issues with your doctor or insurance directly, so you don't have to. They take out that annoying part. The best part, the service is free. You just pay your regular copays like any other pharmacy. Now, it's recognized by Time Magazine as a top 25 invention. Jill Duffy gave it a great review in PC Magazine, and it's worth checking out. It could really just save time in your life and just make things a lot more simple. Visit pillpack.com/twit to sign up now. It only takes 5 minutes to get started. They take care of everything for you. When you use our link and transfer your prescriptions to PillPack, you'll get a credit for $20 worth of vitamins and OTCs. That's pillpack.com/TWIT. All right, TNT's fan of the day is Bruce Kaplan. I'm going to try this at Gizgert Highway on Twitter, who sent us this picture of Megan and I on the Twit stage at NAB in Las Vegas because, hey, did you know we were in Las Vegas the last couple of days? Well, we were. There we are. Actually, we spoke with him before and after the show. Super awesome guy. He's a cab driver. He had some things to say about Lyft and Uber. Contrary to the kind of popular, opinions of many of the people that have been on this show. Very informative from a very different perspective. So it was really great talking with Bruce. Thanks for sending that in, Bruce. And you can show us how you watch or listen. Just record a video, take a picture of yourself, your setup, post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, whatever you got. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
Yeah, thank you, Bruce. Mm-hmm. Cold brew coffee is a thing. It's a thing that I like to drink, but it is not a thing I would ever consider making on my own. Nicole, you recently reviewed a machine that would do it for me. What can you tell us about the Peak, and tell me if it's the Peak or the PK?
Or the PQ. Is it PQ?
PQ? It's P-I-Q-U-E. How do you pronounce it?
It's Peak. It's okay, it's peak. Pronounced yes, Peak. Your first instinct okay. was correct. So as we all know, I mean, there are a few ways to make cold brew coffee. Is essentially you brewing coffee with room temperature or cold water. And the reason you would do that is because you're brewing it with hot water, makes it more acidic. It tends to be more bitter. Whereas cold brew, it's sort of a smoother, less bitter, less acidic taste. It's better for those with sensitive stomachs, especially, and sensitive teeth. So brewing it with cold water sort of bypasses all of that stuff. But it's usually very time intensive. It takes around 12 to 24 hours in like a French press. You have to do like it's very complicated. But this machine that this Peak machine, this is very very early prototype machine by a subsidiary of GE Appliances. So they know what they're doing. GE Appliances, they know what they're doing. And it's essentially what they're doing. So what you do is you put the coffee grounds in there. You put the water in there and then you stir it up, make it all saturated. You put it in the machine. And what it does, it does a vacuum infusion. So there's a vacuum pump inside the machine that sucks the air out of that little brew chamber. And that essentially, it sort of speeds up the extraction of the coffee into the water. So instead of 12, 24 hours, you get it in like 8 minutes. So it's really good and it's really means delicious. It's really smooth and creamy and like not creamy, smooth and crisp and bright and very clean tasting. That I think a lot of like, you know, hot coffee sort of doesn't have the same flavor profile.
Anytime you take something that takes a really long time and then you find a method that makes it take a lot less time, in my experience, it tends to like not be as good. Did you find that with this? I don't know if I've ever had cold brew coffee, and I love coffee. So apparently I need to try
this. You're not from San Francisco or Brooklyn, apparently.
But I've spent plenty of time there. Or maybe I have, and I just didn't know it. But I don't know. Did you, are you a connoisseur of cold brew coffee, and did you find a difference?
Yeah, so I've had cold brew coffee. I mean, I've had cold brew coffee, you know, at coffee shops and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like I'll buy the concentrate from the store and then dilute it with water and things like that. But I've never actually taken the chance to do it myself because it's so labor intensive. Like you have to all grind it yourself. And I mean, it's just too much work. Plus, like oftentimes I want cold brew coffee when it's a hot summer day or it's really a hot day in general. And I don't have time to like wait 24 hours until the next day when it's going to be cold or who knows. Yeah. So I think it's a really good thing. There are other ways to make cold brew coffee fast, I've sort of learned, but they're still fairly complex. You have to use like nitrous oxide or something.
No big deal.
Not something that I would do. whereas this is sort of a hassle-free option to make cold brew coffee fast.
Some people in our chat room are asking when did coffee get this complicated. It is very complicated. The crossover between the geek culture and the coffee culture and how it comes together is so wonderful. Like I discovered that like 4 or 5 years ago or something. Mm-hmm. I was looking for a new coffee maker and I'm the only one in my house that drinks coffee. So I just wanted one and I didn't want the, you know, the thing, mm-hmm. whatever that's
the
called.
Keurig?
The Keurig.
Yeah, there's a lot of waste for the Keurig.
You know, the thing. Yeah. And so I discovered the AeroPress, and then I like realized there's this whole world of geeks that just really geek out on coffee, and I love it. The other part of this story is not just about coffee, but so this is a crowdsourced, like you said, it's a prototype. It's not out there yet. And it's through a subsidiary of GE, called First Build. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So First Build is essentially their opened maker space that GE Appliances has sort of put some money in. First Build has around like 20 or so employees, so it's a fairly small outfit. What they do is they're the bridge between the maker community and sort of a final market. So what they do is they take an interesting idea and they put resources into it, and they do like small production batches via an Indiegogo or whatever, like a crowdfund campaign, and then they put it to market. So it's sort of like a a little startup-y test bed division within GE. So they can do sort of cooler, more interesting projects, you know, like a cold brew coffee maker, for example, that may not be so mainstream.
So in your research, do you think this would make you believe that a product that you would that would be on Kickstarter or Indiegogo would be more likely to come to life if it were backed by First Build?
I think the fact that GE Appliances is behind it, and the fact that they have all these people that have put some decent amount of like research and really good solid research behind it, really good solid product design behind it, I think that has given me like a little bit more confidence with them versus like some other crowdfunded projects out there that are like the Coolest Cooler, for example.
I know. although that robot, the follow you around or deliver things for you robot, kind of looked like the Coolest Cooler. Maybe that's what they need to do to bring it to market. But anyways,
well, why doesn't GE just support these products? Like, why doesn't GE just pay the money?
I think the fact is because these are sort of cold brew coffee. It's still, as you said, it's still kind of niche, right? Mm. Like, it's like maybe like small percentage of the population is really interested in cold brew coffee. Let's face it, right? So I think it's a way for them to try getting into these markets without investing like a whole ton of like overhead and resources behind it. It's like, okay, let's try it out with like a smaller audience and sort of feel it out a little bit. And that's sort of their plan with things like this.
And like you were saying, the geek audience and the coffee, connoisseur audience, that Venn diagram, that crossover point, it's actually perfect that they go to something like a crowdsourcing, site online, because those geeks that love coffee are going to know and trust something like crowdsourcing in order to actually get access to it. So it's a perfect, mm-hmm. I suppose, marketplace for that. Even though you're not supposed to think of those things as marketplaces, because you might never get anything, by the way. You're funding the idea, not the product.
You might never get to drink coffee again.
Not to overstate it, but yes, coffee is going to go away forever. Possibly.
Wow. Yeah. And we should say, I think this is obvious by what we've already said, but it's not the same just to brew coffee and put ice in it. Not the same at all.
No.
I mean, I read of a method called a Japanese quick cool method, where you can use like a third of your water be ice, and that will apparently get you close, but it's not the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, Nicole, thank you so much for joining us and talking about all the news. It was great to talk to you and get all your insight on all these stories. You're a senior editor at Engadget, we've talked about a few of your stories. What is there anything else that you're working on that you can talk about, or anything that you've published recently that we haven't heard about?
I tend to write a lot about social media and things like that. Recently, I wrote about my sort of addiction with Miitomo, that Nintendo game app that I'm really into for some really weird reason. And next week, I'm actually going to the Samsung Developer Conference to find out what Samsung has to offer. New mobile phones, perhaps? Who knows? So look out for that.
Excellent. Thank you, Nicole. And it's always a pleasure.
At Nicole on Twitter.
I know. She's fortunate to have the first name at name on Twitter. As always, thank you, Nicole. We'll talk to you soon.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. See you later. All right. Tomorrow's guest will be Selena Larson from The Daily Dot. Looking forward to that. As always, TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 a.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can also leave us a short voicemail. That's 260-TNT show. You can find the show on Twitter. We are at Tech News Today TV.
We're also on Facebook at facebook.com/Tech News Today. And if you want to be the first to get our show and you can't watch us live, subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And I am on Twitter. I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director and occasional chuckler over there, Kara Cole, and all the folks who help us produce this show every single day. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.